Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Turning Towards Life. I'm Lizzie and this is Justin, and this is a third space project. So if you want to check out anything else about what we do and who we are, you can go to wearethirdspace.org and you'll see our lovely website and all the things that we want to say in the world by way of a website. We are here live and unrehearsed this week to have a conversation, an unfolding conversation between us. And this week we have Justin's beautiful piece of writing called Parts of Me, Parts of Her, which is a very lovely source to have to spring off from in conversation about this topic that you're bringing, Justin. So thank you for writing and thank you for bringing something so confusing to me. It's like truthful and confusing simultaneously, which is sometimes how I know that things are meant to be studied and taken in by me, because they have a kind of foxing way with them, like it's just out of view or something. So I'm really glad and excited to get into this together so that we can learn what this means to each of us. And I find what happens in each of these conversations is that something is refined, you know, something gets kind of brought to the light and then we get to refine it together. And for me, what happens is that my learning gets crisper and more grounded because of the sources that we bring. So thank you so much and welcome everybody to the conversation. If you want to comment and participate, please do in our live Facebook group. Maybe you're listening afterwards on a podcast. And if you are, you can always come to our Facebook group, which if you just search Turning Towards Life, we will grant you permission to come in and we'd be very, very happy to see you here. It's a lovely little community that's forming. And everybody who's here already in Facebook Live, thank you for being here and thank you for the comments that you bring and the insight and the communication with one another that happens. It's very moving to see and read that after we've finished.
Well, thank you, Lizzie, and good morning, everyone. So pleased to be here and I'm pleased to be home. So this time last week, you're still in Scotland. Lizzie and I was in Wales struggling with internet connections and everything, but by the most glorious coast, and it's been an extraordinary week. And back in London now and the sun is shining and really happy to bring this piece of writing. So Lizzie, is probably obvious to you, but I was thinking about this last week when we were talking, when you brought something very powerful that opened up a very powerful conversation between us about parts, and we got starting to wonder about the way that the different parts of us show up in relationship, in our relationships with other people. And I remembered that I'd written this, so here we go. So as usual, I'll read it and then you can read it and then we'll see what happens. So this is called Parts of Me, Parts of Her. It increasingly occurs to me that my relationship to the world is most often a reflection of the relationships between parts of myself. It helps me to remember that I often see in other people that of myself that I fear, am ashamed of, or have learnt to hide away. That there are other inner relationships that I can call on, the parts of me that are settled when I'm anxious, that love when I'm irritated, that are courageous and able to take action when other parts of me are paralyzed with fear. When I'm bewildered by her rage, to remember to stay in relationship with a part of her that is love. When I'm frustrated by his uncertainty, to remember the part of him that is clarity. And that my certainty that she's judging me might well be the part of me that judges myself, that my need to rescue him is often the part of me that itself longs to be rescued. And that until I learn to see through my ways of pushing away and judging and projecting my interior world, I can expect to have a tricky time loving the outer world in which I live every day as fully as I could.
It increasingly occurs to me that my relationship to the world is most often a reflection of the relationships between parts of myself. It helps me to remember that I often see in other people that of myself that I fear, am ashamed of or have learned to hide away, that there are other inner relationships I can call on, the parts of me that are settled when I'm anxious, that love when I'm irritated, that are courageous and able to take action when other parts of me are paralyzed with fear. When I'm bewildered by her rage, to remember to stay in relationship with the part of her that is love. When I'm frustrated by his uncertainty, to remember the part of him that is clarity. And that my certainty that she's judging me might well be the part of me that judges myself. That my need to rescue him is often the part of me that itself longs to be rescued. And that until I learn to see through my ways of pushing away and judging and projecting my interior world, I can expect to have a tricky time loving the outer world in which I live every day as fully as I could.
So it's such a treat hearing you. I know this happens when each of us have written something, Lizzie, to hear each other read it, in to hear this in your voice and to feel what comes from your reading. And I think the thing that feels most apparent to me from hearing you read these words back is what a revelation it is, it has been for me anyway, to find out that there's more than one part of me. Mm-hmm. And how often what's going on is I'm starting off with a sort of the basic error of assuming that the main thing that I'm feeling at any one time is something that's true about the world as a whole or about other people or about me. And starting to undo all of that in a way we get invited to undo all of that in one go. So maybe when I'm feeling afraid, maybe not all of me is feeling afraid, which for me is a great liberation from being absolutely sure of something. So I've just spoken about this with you so many times and spoken about it here so often, have this feeling of feeling very afraid, like the world is a very frightening place. And that can seem so convincing. And of course, there's truth in it. There's all kinds of things that are frightening in the world. But most often when I feel very afraid that way, it's because one part of me is very afraid. And whatever relationship is going on between the parts of me, that part somehow has stepped to the front and is claiming most of my attention. And I'm learning more and more as I go to say to that part, to speak to that part and to say, would you step aside just a little so that some other parts can come in? And then there are other parts of me, of course, that are creative in the face of difficulty and courageous and settled no matter what's going on, and they can step forward a little bit. But the consequence of all of that is that not only do I make mistakes about myself, but it's so super easy to imagine that the thing I'm experiencing inside is the truth about you or someone else. So the part of me that's feeling afraid will very quickly have me imagine that somebody else, like I'm at risk when I'm with the people I love. And what I'm seeing more and more, Lizzie, is how rarely that's the truth of the matter, or at least the whole truth of the matter. Sometimes it's not at all the truth of the matter. It's the relationship between different parts of me, which parts are coming forward, which parts have sort of kind of got into fiercely wanting to protect me from something. And there's, it strikes me that a lot of what I have had to learn to do is to let go of treating all of those like they're the whole truth of anything. And letting go is a kind of softening in a way. And entering into the possibility that most of what I take to be the case is first and foremost some kind of inner dynamic.
Mm.
And I'm going to have to look much more kindly and much more gently and much more openly to find out something more true about what's really going on between me and another person, or what's going on in another person.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just looking at your words again and feeling the gift of this notion of parts. And, you know, when we're activated or triggered or whatever, so easy to become just one part. It's so easy to become just my anger or just my disappointment or just my sadness. And I'm feeling the invitation to allow this to seep in, so that in those moments there's also a chance that a glimpse of something else could be present too. Because I think in my reactivity is my most painful experience. In my wish to control things or my hurt, I can see that that's where most of my suffering comes from. And to have this way of calling on different parts, to have faith that when I'm feeling rageful, there's also some wisdom. The wisdom part may also be present if I so call on it. You know, it's like a re-empowering to feel like I can have. So in my reactivity, I often feel like I'm just being dragged by it, like I don't have a choice. And I think this is an invitation back to presence and realizing that we have more than just our reactivity. We really do. And to be able to kind of self-regulate so that something else could be present at the same time feels like a very cool kind of conscious practice to notice and to welcome something different. And also, I think the bit for me that's confusing about this, Justin, is the second part where, for example, you say my certainty that she's judging me might well be the part of me that judges myself, that needs that, or that my need to rescue him is often the part of me that itself longs to be rescued. It's like that bit kind of twists me around and I think, oh my goodness. Connecting those things has me feel kind of discombobulated and almost like I feel like my dyslexia gets kind of triggered, which is like, ah, how do I connect those things together? And so I suppose that might be something that I need to learn more deeply because it confuses me. And so my need to rescue you, Justin, is probably the part of me that wants to be rescued. If I just sit with that for a second. My need to fix you is a manifestation of my wanting to be fixed myself. So what I'm taking from that is that in my noticing that I want to fix you, I can take that not as a call to action, like, okay, right, I'm going to do it now. But I could take it as, oh, I'm noticing that I want to try and fix Justin because there's something wrong with him. I could wonder about myself and I could say, so what's my story about my own brokenness that I think needs to be fixed by someone? And then I can begin to learn about myself rather than pick up this project of you and wanting to fix you. So that's the invitation that I can see in the kind of twistiness of projection and seeing through the ways that I am in the world to the point where I can actually say, okay, but what is it that's happening here that I'm invited to? Maybe one other way to say it is, what kind of gift are you trying to give me by having me think that about you? Not that you're having me think that about you, but what kind of gift are you in my life that this thought appears and that I might learn because you're here and we're in relationship? What kind of gift is that giving me to look at in myself?
Really, I'm really struck in what you're saying Lizzie, that this might be an invitation for all of us to look at ourselves, to look at what we, where we usually don't look, or to look at what we prefer to deny or turn away from about ourselves. And I mean that in a loving way, not in a let me see all my awfulness kind of way. So I think it's really helpful to, if you, once we start to get onto the idea that we might be made up of many parts, that there's not just a single Lizzie or a single Justin, that there are lots of different, like a whole family of family system of parts. It's really helpful to see that sometimes that there are parts that are deeply dedicated to trying to protect us, which is a wonderful thing, and often also gets us into trouble. And so I think what happens, at least for me, is if I think about my own, the one of these that's been most familiar to me through my life that I feel very grateful to be having some space around these days, was but still trips me up now and again, is making sure that nobody ever gets hurt by anyone else. So that there's a part of me that is hyper vigilant about nobody should ever get hurt, and like whenever that part of me sees the possibility that someone else might be being hurt, wants to jump in and go, stop it, Lizzie, don't say that to that part. And it's also the part of me that if I inadvertently hurt somebody, wants to leap in to try and make sure that, I think that part usually shames me pretty severely, like, how could you have done that? What a terrible person you are, what a terrible thing that you did. I can see that what's been so liberating is to see, oh, the state of people not getting hurt in the world, the jumping in to try and make sure that doesn't happen, to try and correct you, for example, is if you say something that might be hurtful to someone else, and I can see them feeling wounded and I have to defend them. That mostly what that part of me is doing is wanting to make sure that I don't get hurt. It's my wish to not be hurt. And it's that part of me's wish not to be hurt that's active in the world. And that's why it's so helpful to see ourselves as a family of parts, because that part of me, that protector part of me, first of all, can step in at any time. And it's not the whole of me. So when one part steps in, somehow I sort of lose contact, very easily lose contact with the other parts of, maybe it's time to wait, or maybe, you know, maybe Lisa's really onto something here and is just trying to tell the truth, or all of those kind of things. So first of all, it's to start to see that. And second of all, is to start to see that part of me that wants to protect me from hurt, because it's so dedicated to their not being hurt, which is really beautiful, that people should not get hurt. Very often wants to leap in everywhere. It's like a person in its own right that has got really committed to their not being hurt in the world. And so it's so easy to project that. It's so natural to project that everywhere. And the thing about it is, it feels really important to say is, just like with people, with whole people, it's really helpful to see and find the goodness of another person, even when we're in difficulty with them. With our parts, it seems to me, it's really helpful to see that part when it over-exercises itself, gets me into all kinds of difficulty and unnecessary pain, and causes ruptures in relationships and all kinds of things. But really what it wants is to not be hurt. It wants nobody to be hurt. And there's something I can do in my relationship with that part of me that will have it feel held enough and loved enough and welcomed enough, that it doesn't have to go about doing this hypervigilant protecting all the time. And mostly my work is to love that part in a way. The simplest thing to do with those parts of ourselves is to say to them, I've got you, you're safe, because we're much bigger than all of our parts. The whole of us is something much bigger and wiser and deeper. You're safe. Come and sit with me and we'll face the world together. And then very often I can feel the part relax, and that undoes all of the projection onto it. It's not like I have to fight with it or overcome it or beat it down or banish it or any of those kind of things. Mostly what it is to see it. Oh, look at what is happening here. And then to love it really warmly and deeply and fiercely and uncompromisingly. Seems to me to be a huge resolution to all of this, when very often we try and sort of overcome ourselves, or we try and beat ourselves down to get through, you know, once we're not beating other people down, to get through these difficulties.
Mm. Yeah, I'm feeling into the same part of me as you're speaking, Justin, like the part of me that doesn't want anyone to hurt one another. Definitely hugely strong in me as well. So when people are arguing, I noticed the other day something was happening at the dinner table, and I noticed that part coming up. And what I did is I went like this. So if you're not watching, I closed my eyes and put my head down so that I couldn't see anyone. And I could see that part that couldn't handle the conflict, that couldn't handle the awkwardness, that couldn't handle the kind of what happened, meant there was a kind of no man's land created at the dinner table where everybody just went silent because something somebody said. And I remember feeling kind of excruciated and noticed this part, because I was happened to be doing noticing in that moment. I noticed this part that just thinks, well, if I close my eyes, I put my head down, I don't have to feel this. And of course I did feel it, but it was a little bit less excruciating to me than having to kind of have my eyes open and looking around at what was actually happening. And I think that's the same part of me that arises, Justin, of like, I don't want there to be difficulty between people. The thing was actually nothing to do with me. Like I wasn't speaking. It wasn't to do with me at all. And I was really quite taken aback to feel and see just how affecting it was that there was conflict, and that I felt that excruciated by it. And so I think that showed me that I'm also very invested in there not being that experience is something that I want to move away from, because somehow in me it twists me around to the point of yeah, the word feels like excruciation, like it physically hurt me on the inside to be in this moment of awkwardness and weirdness and tension. And there's a part of me that's very invested in harmony, that's very invested in people loving one another, behaving lovingly towards one another, behaving respectfully towards one another. Part of me that wants everyone to get each other, to see each other. And I think when the opposite of that happens, a really big protector part comes up. And I've been learning just recently that there are lots of different reactions that I can have, but this was a kind of new one to me, which was that just to close your eyes and put your head down and disappear, basically. It was a strategy of disappearance so that I didn't have to I still had to face the part because I was still excruciated, but I didn't have to face that part in all of its glory, because that part really hurts. It's almost unbearable to be in contact when that part arises. And so as we're speaking and identifying that retrospectively as a part, which I think is also part of this practice, is I was conscious of what was happening and I can describe to you what was happening. So clearly other parts were present with the excruciated part. But retroactively, I can look at that and I can study it and I can wonder, so what was at stake? What was so hard? What might have happened if I did look up? What was unbearable to me? And then I can start to peel the layers of the onion back, if you like, and wonder what I have invested in harmony, what it means to me for there to be harmony, what it means to me for there not to be, and what's the risk, what's the cost of it to me. And that conversation feels really interesting, and in this moment I can feel the that there is a lot I could journal about that for like a good half an hour and wonder as to what might come out, because it was a really strong reaction that I had. And I'm also quite a talkative social person at a dinner table, and so for me to go close my eyes and like literally put my head down, and I wonder, I'd god knows what everyone else was thinking or what part that brought up for them even. But I remember thinking, I can't look anyone in the eye, and I can't tolerate it. It's too much for my system. And so then when you invite me to love that part, to say it's okay, you know, there's part of you that finds that too difficult, instead of thinking that I should have been different and I should have been able to handle it or something, I can suddenly feel a kindness coming over me that goes, oh, it's okay. You just find that difficult. Lots of people find that difficult. It's okay to find something hard and to close your eyes and put your head down. And it feels, as I'm saying that to myself too, I can feel like I'm holding quite a young part that finds that kind of conflict really, really hard and really shocking. And often those things happen like suddenly the environment's changed and it used to be fine and now it's not, and now I'm confused and now I don't know what to do because it used to be just fine about 4 seconds ago. So I noticed that there's a kind of historical shock as well in that part that does need love and does need care and does need attending to. When, in a way, if we weren't in this conversation, I wouldn't have probably said this to anyone, and I wouldn't be bringing compassion to that part of me. It would just continue coming up just as it ever had done before, without me loving it, without me paying attention, without me holding and seeing that there's a young, tender part that felt really frightened, I guess, when I think of it. And the way to cope with being frightened is to just close your eyes and put your head down and go invisible.
Yes, well, I think our parts do. And it's really touching to hear you say that you can feel that this part that stepped forward, if you sort of think about it as a part stepping forward when it feels like something needs to happen, that it's a young part. And, when we're small, we don't have all the resources that we do as adults. And also the world seems very big and threatening and can be very big and threatening when we're little. It seems to me it's quite understandable that a part would step forward and do something really big, like alarm bells are ringing, something has to happen here, and a part of us steps forward and has you shut yourself down. And there's a certain wisdom in it, but there's also a certain sort of narrowness in it, because, you know, I know the kind of courageous, loving, open, grounded person that you are. I'm sure could manage quite fine in the midst of, I know you can manage quite fine in the midst of a complicated conflict with other people. So it's such a, so I noticed that, so I have a part that very often steps forward that's also a very young part, Lizzie, that is very, very frightened about being abandoned. And the reason I'm bringing it up just now is that I can see that one of the things I often do with that part, so if I think about what I, as in the wholeness of me, that's not the part, I can often get into, is trying to abandon the part that is frightened of being abandoned, trying to get kind of get it out of the way, because it's really, really inconvenient and painful. It's really painful to walk into a group of friends who I love and to feel frightened that they might have been talking about me behind my back, and that I might not be welcome anymore. And that's this little frightened part. And the more I try to overcome it, like to overcome my resistance or whatever, the more what I'm doing is abandoning that part of me, the very part that is terrified of being abandoned. And so I'm piling on the very circumstances that keep that part hypervigilant. And that's why this thing that you're saying that I've also found to do is the more I can just make the move of, oh, a part of me is activated here, I wonder what part it is. And then to pour love to pour love and holding and safety on that part, the more often the part goes, oh, it's okay.
Mm.
I feel safe now. I'm not going to, like, I promise, it's almost like I'm promising that part of me, I won't abandon you. I know you're frightened. I can see you're frightened of being abandoned. I will not abandon you. I'm right here.
Mm.
And then, of course, like any small person, it can sort of snuggle up and go, okay. Like, I don't need to just step out front and try to make sure everyone's okay. I can. And the thing that I'm feeling that is coming as a result of being in this conversation with you, Lizzie, is that, you know, very often we, when we think of ourselves as one thing and we go, I got triggered, I froze, I got reactive, I got into a fight, I was calm. That's a really helpful starting place, but very often the only way to work with all of these dynamics is to go, part of me is that, and to wonder about, so what's the relationship between me and the part? That opens up so many avenues. And like you said, like, I feel really tender towards the part of you.
Mm.
I feel really loving towards the part of you that so wanted to protect you that it would have you disappear at the dining table. Like, I love that part and how much it cares about you.
Mm.
I feel so glad. And I can also see that there's a, what a beautiful thing it is for you to do, to find a way to love that part so it doesn't have to feel like it has to take responsibility for everything.
And also, Justin, as you say that, I'm noticing, so there's one thing for me to love that part, but then as I've shared with you what that part manifesting up into a circumstance looked like and felt like to me, you saying I love that part has me feel like way less ashamed of that part being part of me.
Yeah.
Like, there's a part that also goes, oh my God, you know, you're basically quite a grown-up adult now. You've got quite a lot of years under your belt for you to put your head down at the dinner table and just get as small as you possibly can. Like, what the hell are you doing? Like, that, there's a critical voice that says, you idiot. But then when you said, oh, there's that part, and I love that part that wants to protect you, and I feel loving towards that part, I think, oh, okay, well, if Justin thinks that or feels that towards it, maybe that's okay that I have that part guy. And there's just this softening that feels really welcome. Really welcome that I could bring that to the light, and that it's not just someone saying, pull yourself together, don't be ridiculous. You know, that's the voice of my inner critic when those things happen, is the kind of get back into some kind of grown-up behavior, for God's sake. When, of course, all of us have these things that come up. Why would I be any different to anyone else? Why, you know, that thing about the inner critic is, it's like, demands me to be completely fine all the time or something. And it just feels very welcome to, yeah, be softening into some part that's real and that has a place and that isn't to be exiled and shamefully denied. But there is a young part of me that doesn't really know what to do when tricky things happen between certain people in my life. And so I just go like, and maybe I do it all the time, it's just the first time I've noticed it. But just put my head down, close my eyes, get really small, and kind of curl my toes a bit as well. Just stay, you know, kind of bring my extremities in as far as I can, like a little mollusk or something.
Mm. Well, maybe this is a wonderful place for us to end, which is to remember that we don't have to be in this on our own. That, of course, we all have, I mean, you're opening the door to another whole giant conversation here, which is, we have the parts of ourselves that sort of react or try to protect us, and then we have the other parts of ourselves that will shame us for, yeah, shame that part for being so childlike, so idiotic, so, you know, all those critic parts. And I think very often we try and side with our critic parts. We go, yes, I have to get rid of this thing in me. And I could really feel my real genuine appreciation, my gladness that there's a part of you that so wants to protect you from the kind of hurt that comes from being in conflict.
Mm.
And it seems to me that that is one of the gifts we humans can give to one another, is to not leave one another alone to do this work, that we can feel into the goodness that's happening, even in something that might be tricky and confusing and difficult. And instead of siding with one another's fierce, shaming, critic parts, we could do our best to love the parts of the people that we care about.
Mm.
Even when the way that those parts are behaving is causing us, you know, relational trickiness. What a gift that is.
Mm.
I didn't know until we were in this conversation that we were going to end up talking about a part of either of us, but a part of you that I could feel such appreciation for.
Mm.
So it's lovely that you were touched that way. And yeah, what a thing to welcome all the parts of others. So here we should end another week. Thank you again, Lizzie, for being in such a truthful, open, wide-ranging, always surprising conversation.
Yeah, you too.
And thank you, everyone, for being with us. So we are so glad that you're here, and we will, with all a fair wind, be back next Sunday for something that Lizzie's going to bring us, and we'll see you then.
Thanks,
bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.